Hi, this is Iris Jackson, and this is Miracles Happen, Dreams Do Come True. And today, I have to say every day that I do my program, I ask that the Ascended Masters give the greatest possible service to all life out of it. And then I also have the people on that I want to talk to, that I'm interested in what they're doing, that I feel their consciousness uplifts me and supports me in living a miraculous life. And Peter Mount Shasta is definitely on that list, and I want to thank you for being here again with us, Peter.
Thank you, Iris, and I always enjoy talking with you, too. So, yeah, well, it's a great opportunity to share with your listeners, and I hope that everyone that's listening will find some inspiration. And we were going to talk this time a little bit about judgment. Of course, none of us.
I think maybe that's a 10-part series to begin with.
Right.
None of us are what?
None of us do that, of course.
I tell you, one day my son and I just sat down and we went, it's our job to tell everybody what they're doing wrong.
Yeah, right. Right.
Such a relief to give that up. Do you know what a big job that is?
Right. Well, I remember when I first came to Mount Shasta, my teacher Pearl that I studied with, she trained me diligently for a number of years, and then she said, well, you've got this teaching, now you should go out and teach other people and tell them, you know, this great law. So I was all fired up, you know, and of course, that teaching, there's the higher teaching, and then there's, you know, the lower teaching where you come down to start talking about personal habits or preferences people make in their daily life. And so at that time, I thought I knew what was right for not only myself, but everybody else. And I was
Especially everybody else.
Fired up. Of course, what I was doing was right for everybody. And so if I was sitting at a table, I would, you know, people seemed to be, you know, doing things that I didn't think was right. I'd try to find a gentle way, but I would kind of try to remind people of what the true path was, you know. And, you know, it finally took me a while to realize that that wasn't the best way, you know. So, you know.
Were you very popular?
Well, you know, fairly. I mean, I had some, you know, I didn't do it too heavily, but there was times when I would realize it would come out, you know.
Uh-huh.
So people were pretty good-natured about it. So, and then other people had their judgments too, you know. But
about how you were doing it?
Well, no. Everyone has their own idea of what the right way to do everything is, you know.
Yeah, and if everybody would just do it that way, the world would work.
That's right. People don't realize that when you're pointing your finger at someone else, there are three fingers pointing back at you.
Oh, man, I thought you only got 40% of that.
Right.
Well, wait a minute. That's a 300% return.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know if you ever had, now with modern technology, you can get, you know, your karma back instantly, because on the internet, if you make a comment on some website like a blog, or if you belong to a email listserv where your comments go out to a large number of people and you make a critical comment, you're going to get 10 back by the next sunrise. You know, you're going to hear from 10 people criticizing your criticism. So it's one way that the internet has kind of fostered people working on themselves, you know.
Wow.
So anyway.
Wow.
So anyway, yeah.
Holy karma, Batman.
That's right. And, you know, you hear in Christian circles about the Day of Judgment, and I don't think this is something where you, you know, go before someone that judges you. I think that you judge yourself, and I think they replay your lifetime for you, and you see it in the context of all your past lifetimes, and you realize where you messed up, where you put blocks in other people's paths, or where you fell short of what you could have achieved, and then that's when you decide if you need to come back again to work on that. So I think we're really our own greatest judge, you know. We're the judge, the jury, and the executioner all in one.
Well, and the last one to give up something against ourselves.
Absolutely.
I think it's so hard to quit judging other people because it covers up the feelings.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, a dog taught me this, Peter.
Oh.
And
very articulate dog, huh?
Well, yeah, and more than that, but, you know, I know you've worked firsthand with the Ascended Masters, with Saint Germain, had him appear to you. And in some of the Ascended Master information, it says we need to rise up to where there aren't any animals, you know, that we, animals need to be removed.
Mm-hmm.
But I have found animals
to
teach me the most godly, sacred lessons.
Absolutely.
And this is one of them. I had this dog that I loved with all my being, and he got hit by a car.
Oh, that's bad.
And I grieved for 3 years. I loved this dog so much. Finally, I had a dream. My grandmother came to me, and she said, just cut the shit about the dog.
Yeah, right.
You know, just
funny in the dream, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I kept trying to replace him and get exactly the same dog, you know, and the dog would always do something wrong where I would go, oh, you're not Bingo, you're not as good a dog as him, I don't love you like I loved him, and they would always disappear, Peter, and then I was on my like third or fourth dog trying to replace him, and I came home one day, and she's just so glad to see me. She's just shaking all over, and she put her big muddy paw in my white silk pants and dug her claws in, you know.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And I was judging her, saying, "You're not Bingo. You're not the dog I loved." And I got, oh my God, she's a perfectly wonderful dog, and I've never let her be that.
Mm-hmm.
I've never really received her, and she's just so wonderful. And I thought, what is that judgment protecting me from? And what it was having my heart ripped out and run over by a truck again.
Mm.
You know, I was afraid to love that much again, Peter.
Yeah, I understand that. That's really hard.
But then the next thought I had was how happy she was to see me come home.
Oh.
And I thought of why people want to be in love.
Yeah.
And why it makes them so happy. And you know what it is? It's being in the process of just pouring out that love. It's not somebody's the right way or anything like that. It's I love you, and I'm not holding it back because you look a certain way or do certain different, do things that I don't like.
Well, that's a real profound lesson to realize that, you know, the love is separate from all those other things, you know.
Yes, and
all those judgments.
And it's just being willing to dive into the love. And
yeah.
You know, it hasn't been comfortable for people to dive into the love with each other unless somebody was bleeding, Peter.
Yeah, I understand that, yeah.
But,
you know, well, go ahead.
I had
your story of the dog reminds me of this dog I had when I was about 9 years old and still brings a lump to my throat. You know, I just loved that dog so much. I was an only child and there weren't any kids really around in my neighborhood that, you know, was play with. I was pretty much alone, and this dog was my best friend. And then my mom got rid of it. You know, she said we would go away on weekends, and it was just too much trouble to find a place, find someone to take care of it. And it was, like you say, you know, it would get its paws muddy and put them up on the sofa or something like that. And I held that. It was, like, devastating to me. It just broke my heart. And I held that against my mother till she was on her deathbed, you know?
Well, and she's in a little trouble with me right now.
Yeah, right. You don't take a dog away from a 9-year-old boy, you know?
That's the, I mean, didn't she see you?
Well,
things were
more important than people, it seemed like, you know? Her precious Persian rugs and silk sofa and all that stuff, you know? Or like at a cocktail party, the people would have their glasses, their crystal glasses on the coffee table, and the dog would come in, and with his tail, he'd clear the whole table.
Yeah.
Because he was happy, you know, to see everybody.
Yeah, and he didn't need a drink first to be that.
No, that's right. Then, like many years later, my daughter had some cats, and she went away to school, and she had like a year to find a home for these cats, and hadn't done it, you know. And finally I got to the point where I had to find homes for them. And she, you know, she reminded me, she heard my story about my dog, you know.
Uh-huh.
And it really hurt me. But then I finally forgave my mother for what she'd done to me, you know, when I had to get rid of my daughter's cats, you know.
Oh.
So, you know, that judgment that I held for, you know, probably 40 years or 50 years, maybe more, you know, against my mother, you know, really came back to me in spades, you know. So, you know, any judgment, even if we're right about seeing that, you know, what someone is doing might not be in their best interest, but if we hold some strong opinion about another person, that's going to come back to us one way or another. And I see that as the function of the guru. You know, I mentioned the guru, and a lot of people say, well, I don't have a guru. Well, everybody has a guru, really. It's your own higher self. And it's functioning all the time. And, you know, if you don't believe it, just talk to your higher self and say, I'm ready for a lesson. Teach me something. And, boy, you'll get it.
Oh, you have to specify. Teach me in a fun way. Teach me in a light way. I don't feel like any shitty lessons today.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I have to say that, or seems like my mind will concoct something that's so outlandish and uncomfortable that it's like I can't even focus on what is the lesson. It's so uncomfortable. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Well, those are the big ones that you have to kind of say, this is so big, I can't imagine what, you know, higher purpose there is to what's happening in my life, like right now. But please show me what that is and turn it around, you know, work a miracle in this situation and teach me what it is I'm supposed to learn from this, or show me how this is going to strengthen me, because there's nothing in our lives that's not there for a reason. You know, and it's hard to see that when
something's
happening.
Some of these gifts, instead of being grateful, it's like, could I please return this to Nordstrom, man?
Yeah, right.
Get my money back. It's like that lesson, I think it's being, some of the lessons have looked like a snake to me, and I've become so fascinated with the snake that I didn't see, that I wasn't focusing on the outcome I wanted. I can't exactly say this, but it is judgment of the situation and judgment
of
myself for creating it.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, you.
You know, the worst judgment is, well, I wouldn't say the worst, but just as bad a judgment is the judgment of yourself, you know, and to feel that you've made a mistake, or you've done something wrong. and or to feel that you're, even to feel that you're not capable of doing something, because, you know, we know that we're all manifestations of God at every moment. We're all embodiments of the divine. So how can the divine not be capable of handling a situation? You know, what made you feel that you were a lesser being?
Oh, well, something like this, Peter. Like looking at something I had created and saying, you know, like what Werner said, only an asshole would create this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, coming to that place of being responsible and then saying only an asshole would create this. Or it's always whatever somebody else has done. It's
right.
Always for me about, you know, my judgment of myself. Well, if I was the Christ, why would I be doing this?
Sure.
And then the answer is something like, because I don't know I'm the Christ. I don't.
Right.
Well, I'm just bringing that up because you were talking about focusing on the I Am Presence and your true identity as a way out of that.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one way to get out of that whole thing about saying, am I doing the right thing? Am I living up to expectations? You know, there's a checklist that we all have, and we go down that checklist. I should be better doing this, or is my house clean enough, or... you know, what do my friends think of me? There are always, you know, many, many ways that we're going to find to judge ourselves if that's what we want to do. But if you start thinking of yourself as an embodiment of the divine, say, you know, I am the presence of God right here and now, then you don't need to be judging yourself or going down that checklist, you know? So,
well, because you'll just be sure that you are I think you're talking about that thing in I love this book. She's like Pearl to me, Emily Cady.
Oh yeah.
Lessons in Truth.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, I forget why I was telling you this. It was important too.
Well, about seeing yourself as the divine, Emily Cady.
Giving your divine self full possession of your life and your body and all the conditions in it. I think just really giving that over and saying, you're in charge, you do this. I don't know what to do with this earth stuff, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
My personality doesn't. It's just like I just look at all the things that everybody has to handle in the world, and I almost it's like no way.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it's overwhelming. But you know, when you're in one of those situations that's overwhelming, or you feel you're in over your head, if you just stop and say, I wouldn't be here if it weren't God's will, you know, or the guru's will, or whatever you want to call it, that I'm here for a reason, there's a purpose to this, and I'm just going to sit and be still until I see what it is I need to do. But, you know, to say, it shifts things around. You know, like I don't know if I mentioned it before, I had an audit by the IRS last year, and I went in feeling terrified, but I kept saying, this is my guru sitting here, and I couldn't be here if it weren't God's will, you know. I haven't done anything wrong. I've done my best all along. I've prayed to God over everything that I've done with regard to my taxes, and I, you know, it's brought me here, so there must be a reason for this, so... Okay, guru, take command here and show me what to do. So I just said, well, if this is my guru, I should feel love toward this being.
For the IRS auditor?
Yeah, to the IRS auditor. So
The acid test. You pass.
Yeah, I kept saying, I went from fear to doubt, you know, the fear was decreasing, went to doubt, you know, then to questioning kind of, and then finally it went to kind of, well, understanding, a little bit of appreciation, and then actually I felt his heart kind of responding to this. And then I actually felt at the end he started calling me his friend, you know? And we developed actually a very kind of a deep relationship, you know? And, you know, it turned out they owed me money, but the real gold in that situation was how I was able to transmute the fear. And it's just by seeing it in a different light, you know, by seeing it as a gift that God had given me, and that, you know, the gift had it had nothing to do with money or with taxes. It just had to do with going into some fearful situation where I felt that I was in completely over my head, and, you know, asking my inner presence to completely turn it around, to dissolve the fear, and to come out of it feeling love. You know, so I actually felt like love for that agent by the end, you know, and a lot of gratitude, you know. So that's another point, is the gratitude, you know. I feel gratitude even for difficult, unpleasant situations, because it's all a gift from God. It's like the challenging, unpleasant situations that actually make you grow as much as the pleasant ones, you know. So to say, thank you, God, for allowing me to be here where I am, like right now. I know I am exactly where I'm supposed to be. And I know that you're using this location, these circumstances, to teach me exactly what I need. And I feel a tremendous gratitude for that. And please open my eyes and open my heart to show me what I need to learn from this, why you've put me here. You know, and I think that turns it around, rather than grumbling, say, you know, oh man, I wish I were someplace else, I were with different people, that this wasn't happening.
Whatever this lesson is, take it back. I don't like it.
Right.
How about next year this time?
right. Or like what a lot of people I won't name, they'll say that's the sinister force that's working. You know, the reason bad thing is happening to me is this sinister force. It's nothing I did. It's like some, you know, dark entity or dark force that's completely removed from me, that's attacking me, you know, or that's, you know, there are dark forces, but the basic circumstances of our life are not as a result of that, you know. So, you know, it's kind of a cop-out to blame it on other people. Or
them, the sinister force,
right.
Them.
Or the IRS or whatever, you know. I mean, I had just a, like, beautiful day, kind of sometime last week. I just was feeling euphoric. It was like, even though we'd had some cold weather, it was had warmed up and it was like springtime, and I was kind of walking with a bounce in my step, and then someone said, oh, man, I am so bummed out because of the chemtrails, you know. And, you know, I mean, I think is something valid, but, you know, it's like I'm not going to give my whole life power over to that, you know. I mean, so this one person had been having a bad day because they saw a cloud in the sky, you know, that they thought was part of some conspiracy, and I was focused on just the feeling in my heart, and, you know, I guess we all have ways we give our power away, you know, whether it's chemtrails or the international banking conspiracy or whatever to blame for our misfortunes, you know.
Well,
but,
Peter,
you know, it's how we feel ourselves. That's up to us at every moment. We choose how we want to feel about something, you know.
Well, yeah, and I want to choose joy. I choose joyous. That's how I want to feel, and that's how I want to inspire other people to feel by my presence. And so kind of what I've learned about that is it's my job to, like, I see us as the SWAT team. And we're the ground troops. And it's our job to call in all of the angels and ascended masters and cosmic beings to transmute the things that we see with the activities of the sacred fire. And then it's to just go on our way being joyous, knowing it is done.
That's great. That's beautiful.
because we called in the miraculous.
Sure. And what happens if you call them in, but you still feel bad yourself? You know?
Well, I don't know about you, but I usually get that lesson back in about 24 hours.
That's good.
Not necessarily. It's like, could we do something a little easier now, please?
Right.
But I just feel like I want to hold my place, the place of the Ascended Master's joy, and call the activities of the sacred fire to handle it. And I guess I take the attitude that we who are aware of the Ascended Masters and the divine plan and to say what should be happening here.
Yeah, right.
Well, it's not like what I think should be happening here, but I would just like it to be more joyous for everyone. I would just like everyone to have freedom, Peter, and know who they are and be happy and have that bliss you're talking about and come from the attitude and the ground of being that because something is brought to our attention, something miraculous is done about it. Do you see what I'm saying?
Sure. Well, I mean, even putting your attention on what you want is the beginning of having it, you know? So, like, just saying, I am joy, you know?
Uh-huh.
I am the presence of God. And right here and now, even though I see bad things happening around me, or what appear to be bad things, even though everything's taking place in the heart of God, still there are appearances that appear to be bad. But to say I'm going to take my attention off those appearances and put them on the one eternal, unchanging reality of God within me, and that God presence is joy. You know, it is joyous. And the more I can put my attention on that center of my own being, the more that joy is going to come through. But just by saying that word, and it's not like you're trying to, you know, like the power of positive thinking, even though you're feeling miserable, like you try to trick yourself and to say, you know, isn't everything great, you know? And it doesn't mean to suppress what you're feeling, but one way of turning that feeling around is to put your attention on the joy rather than on the negative, you know?
Right. And I also think it's like, you know, you and I were talking about movies
yeah.
a few weeks ago, and we were talking about the number of negative suggestions and how it's sort of pounded into people.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I read in one of the Ascended Master's discourses is that when you see something like that, to call forth the I Am Presence and say, I am the presence on guard consuming instantly everything that seeks to disturb or limit. And then when I do it from my I Am Presence, I'm doing it for everyone that ever sees that movie or that, or hears that news or you know, false report or whatever. Whatever it is, you know, that we instinctively know we don't want on this planet. And I don't know how to say that without, you know, it's not wrong, it's not bad, it's not anything like that, except that I know it's not the divine plan because it's not joyous, but here's the key, coming from being as a little child, it's not fun. It's like, We've stopped having fun when
I think it's kind of interesting. I'm watching how people now are talking about our president, you know? I mean, at first when he was elected, he was, you know, the hero. Of course, there was always, you know, some people saying, well, he's the bad guy. But now even some of the people that supported him are very critical of him, you know? I mean, it's like they're treating him like he has unlimited power in his office, you know? And he's still the same person he was a year ago, you know? But it's like they're seeing him in a different light, you know? That may have nothing to do with who he actually is or what he's actually doing. It's just he's being portrayed differently. And, or, I mean, even if people are seeing some things accurately, it's anybody that's in the public spotlight, people are projecting all of their own wants, needs, and desires on him. And then when they're not getting what they want, you know, then they feel angry at him, you know? Like, they thought that he was going to be their savior, you know? Or that he was going to save the world, you know? It's pretty hard to live up to that, you know? I mean, even if he were Jesus, and they show him, here's your office, the Oval Office, you know, he's still surrounded. He still has to work through that establishment, you know? So,
and,
you know,
and
people
he still has to work with where people are.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, I mean, he still has to work with all those people around him that have their own particular agendas, you know, and limited views, you know. It's not like he's going to just step into the office and everything's going to change immediately.
Well.
But people, like, you know, I just see the blame that people send out to him.
Yeah.
That doesn't help him at all, you know, if we
just
sort of visualize him as a master or as a Christ being and the ascended masters around him. Sending energy down to him, that would help him more than anything. Sending out criticism, blame, judgment, condemnation to him actually, you know, hurts him or, you know, restricts his ability to act. But if we could turn that around, you know, and say, well, maybe I was naive or I had too high expectations, I realized that he doesn't have unlimited power to do whatever he wants to do. You know, instead I'm going to send him my good will and my prayers, you know, that would be more constructive, you know.
Well, and ask for ascended master discrimination for all people that are in leadership roles. And,
exactly.
And know that they operate under tremendous pressure. I actually wrote a letter to Michelle Obama.
Nice.
And I kept thinking about two things that happened in real short order after the election. Mm-hmm. And one of them was somebody, they did this whole fashion faux pas thing about how she had tennis shoes that cost $540. They had photographs, and then they weren't very close up, so they circled the shoes, you know, and to me they were not cute, and I wouldn't have paid $5 for them. But I feel that people who are in public office, and especially them, they're willing to give away their heart and soul, their family life, their private life, mm-hmm. and pretty much everything to serve the country.
Yeah.
And I mean to be there day after day. And you know, I know you're a person who it's real important to have inner time to study inwardly with your I Am Presence and the Ascended Masters, and that's one of your priorities, right?
Absolutely.
And it is to me, too. It's like no matter what else I accomplish in the day, if I haven't done that, it's a source of dissatisfaction, Peter. So I guess, the other thing was she was really criticized for going with bare arms.
Yeah, right, in Europe, right?
Yeah, and I said to her, if I had those arms, I would go sleeveless in the snow, and I would set new protocol, and nobody would be able to talk me out of it.
Right.
Nobody.
Right.
And I told her to set protocol. you know, to say, this is the way it's done now.
Sure.
And I just feel like people that are willing to put their whole selves on the line that way, the happiness of their family, their personal safety, everything, their privacy,
mm-hmm.
I'll support them.
Absolutely.
I'll support them and pray for them and call for Ascended Master discrimination for them and ask that the Ascended Masters be able to give the greatest possible service through them. And, you know, that's our whole job is to ask the Ascended Masters
yeah.
to give the greatest service
yeah.
to us, because that's what this vehicle is here on this
yeah.
plane for.
Well, I remember when the Watergate thing was in full sway and with Nixon.
Yeah.
And he was being criticized right and left. You couldn't read a good thing about him anywhere. And one day I just felt that, like the anguish, you know, that he must be feeling. And I said a prayer. I just said, may God come forth in Richard Nixon. And all of a sudden, it's just like he appeared in front of me, like he like came right through the wall in his etheric body. And he said, thank you, thank you. I am so grateful. At last, there's like one person who, you know, is helping me. You know, and that's not to, I'm not supporting what he did, you know.
I know exactly what you mean.
But all that blame and criticism, condemnation was not helping the situation at all. And by sending out that love, I felt that was doing one positive thing to help him as a human being, because we all have that basic goodness in our hearts, that light, you know? And
yeah.
that's why it's so bad to criticize somebody, because it's like affecting that light, you know?
I don't know. We're judging their judgments here.
Yeah, right.
Their judgments were really bad.
Yeah.
You know,
let me come back to self-observation, you know, and then we're even observing ourselves. So I would tell you a funny story that it's somewhat connected with this, but there were two guys in an ashram, and they both wanted to smoke, but they weren't sure that it would be approved by the guru, you know. So the one guy says, I'll ask Guruji. So he went to the guru and he said, Guruji, is it okay if I smoke while I'm meditating? And the guru said, what are you possibly thinking about? No, it's not all right to smoke while you're meditating. So the guy went back and he told his friend and he said, see, I told you. He said, we're not supposed to smoke while we're meditating. And the guy said, well, look, let me ask him. So the friend went to the guru and asked him, and he said, Guruji, is it okay if I meditate while I'm smoking? And the guru said, oh, yes, yes, of course. You should meditate while you're doing everything. So if you're smoking, it would be good to meditate then, too. You know, observe yourself doing that. So the idea is to be meditating all day long, but no matter what you're doing, to be in that state of self-observation. But it just showed how thinking about the situation differently, you know, created completely different circumstances, you know, or different outcome. So, you know, it's how we look
one,
about things.
Yeah,
you know?
One way he had to give up his vice. The other way he got to keep his vice and feel holy and pure about it.
Yeah, right.
That's
right.
Pretty tricky. We're pretty tricky, aren't we?
Right, absolutely.
Well, it's like, you know, it's like creating what you want to, though. I feel like one of the ways I've been creating is, you know, Joanna Terry was here, and we went out to dinner at this place on Sunday night, and she said, first time she was there, she said, this is the best food I've ever had.
Mm.
And we just love it. And so they had been really slow, and they had closed, you know, much earlier than their posted hours. And the kitchen was all clean and everything. And they were about ready to go home, and we just turned around and said, well, could we do takeout? You know, how much trouble would takeout be? And pretty soon, they opened the whole thing. They treated us like princesses. They started bringing us drinks, and we said, oh, we were just going to take it to go, and they said, oh no, stay. And
nice.
and the owner was in charge of this, and he said he was paying four guys an extra hour to give two people dinner.
Wow.
And I, you know, I was perfectly willing to go someplace else, Peter. And then it changed, and I feel like God is, God Goddess I Am is revealing itself to me in those ways.
Yeah, well, your light was going out to them, you know, and they must have been feeling it.
Huh.
So that's how, that's a perfect example of how in, you know, various situations, if you say, wait a minute, you know, I am the presence of God, they are the presence of God, and God is manifesting love in this situation, you just don't know all the good things that can possibly come of that, you know? Just by being that simple, humble presence, you know? So it's not like you were insisting that they do that. It's just you were being the presence, and then that presence went out to them, and, you know, they were tuned in, and out of the goodness of their hearts, they did that. And that's, I think, how, you know, just being that presence can open all these doors for us, you know.
Well,
if we just let it, if we get out of our heads and just let it work.
Yeah, and they very generously, gallantly did it, too. And we were duly impressed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Well, it's the name of my book, I Am the Open Door. When you're in the I Am, all the doors open for you.
Wow.
So.
Well, you know what else? You know what other ingredient was there? I was willing to have a good time.
Right.
I was willing to just have a good time. You know, and have some good food wherever we were going to go, and have everybody win. And that's what I always ask for,
mm-hmm.
is that everybody's blessed and everybody wins. And how can you lose at that?
Mm, that's great. I do this affirmation frequently. It's like, I am the commanding, governing presence of divine love going before me throughout this day, commanding perfect peace, love, wisdom, harmony, and the Ascended Master's divine plan in all activity. And then you'd be amazed at the things that open up for you.
Wow.
Or, you know, I am the presence of divine love going before us this evening, bringing us to the perfect restaurant, you know, seeing to it that we get the perfect food and that we have a wonderful time. And then you kind of get your mind out of the way and see where it takes you. It's that old expression, let go and let God, you know. But when you use that I am, you call God into action. Like I'm, every time, like when we're having these talks over the phone and I hear you, I hear when you say I am or I am the presence of the Ascended Masters, I hear this power that comes through. You know, it's not because you're raising your voice. It's just what you're connecting with when you say that.
Yeah.
And I feel that released, you know. So if you can just, if people can just be still and allow that to come through them, they will, you know, miracles will happen.
Well, I wanted to, that's one of the things you said, to rise out of judgment is to focus on your I Am presence. And to think about it and be with it and you know, I wanted to tell people that your website is really a gift in that way. It's an eye picture of our divine self, our I Am presence, and then it's at the same time, Marlise,
yeah.
Singing I Am, and she has a very, very clear picture of what I Am is.
Yeah, that's, when she's singing that, it just brings it through. You know, it's like she's repeating that over and over like a mantra.
Yes.
I Am. And people tell me that they just sit with that on like a screensaver, practically, you know. There's that picture of the rainbow presence of the I Am, somebody meditating with the beautiful rings of light around them, and then hearing her chanting, I Am, that it just makes them feel so good looking at it. And I think that that song is available through Starseed Music. In fact, that whole album is available through Starseed Music.
Yes,
so,
it's very wonderful. And and their website, Deer in the Yard, is well worth looking at, too. And you know, they do daily miracles, Peter. I used to think that only people like St. Francis could connect with and touch the animals.
Right.
And the deer come in their yard for massages and...
Yeah, I know.
Have their babies in the pyramid in their backyard and come to them and get food from them.
And come in their house,
I know, eat the house plants. did you see this video where Marlise keeps saying no, 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 and the deer's just casually eating the house plant?
Right.
But it's we are being shown daily miracles by giving up, you know, that part that says, oh, that couldn't happen. That couldn't be real.
That's right.
And those are our unrighteous judgments.
You know, I was just talking with Marlise's husband, Bastian, about an hour ago.
Uh-huh.
He just moved up here to Mount Shasta. And we were talking about how we're like... computer terminals, and you can say God is like the mainframe, you know, and we all have, through our own terminals, access to every program that's on the mainframe, you know. So each of us is not the totality of God or the totality of everything on the mainframe. Maybe we choose to only run one or two programs at a time or to access one particular website, even though we have access to all the websites on the internet or all of the We have access to all of the programs or all the data that's on the mainframe. So it's up to us, you know. But then we discover maybe we have some glitches in there and we need to rewrite some of the programs. And Bastian said, well, it's a lot easier to rewrite the computer code than it is our own mental code, you know, because we have emotional attachments to those glitches, you know.
Well, what does that mean, the computer code? You know, you're just talking to somebody that's you know, I learn something about the computer every day, but mostly, you know, we haven't gotten along that well, and I don't know exactly what you're saying there.
Well, if you say, well, when I press this combination of keys, this is supposed to happen, then it doesn't happen, or the whole thing crashes when you try to open a certain program and it crashes, like, you know, the whole screen goes blank or something like that.
Or it says, you lost your connection.
Yeah, or it freezes or something like that, and you have to reboot the computer. So there's some, like, maybe a conflict in there. Some programs are not working well together, or there's some program wasn't written properly.
Yes.
So at some point, someone would have to go into that program and rewrite the code so it doesn't crash, you know, or so it, you know, so it produces the desired results. But I mean, we all have that in our own lives. Like we think we know what we're doing, and then we find ourselves in a situation where our training doesn't work the way we thought it was going to, or we say something to somebody and instead of it pacifying them, it makes them angry, and you go, whoops, I guess I didn't understand, you know, what I needed to do here. So, or, you know, I said the wrong thing. Why is that? I had a misperception. So it's what Bastian was saying is it's much easier to go, into the computer and rewrite the code there, you know, go into that program and rewrite the code, than to actually look at the agreements that we've made in our own mind or the misperceptions that we have, because there's a lot of energy attached to them. When you're looking at a computer code on your screen, there's not the emotional attachment so
much. Like a barcode.
Yeah, it's just math, you know, or logic, actually. But when you look at yourself and you realize, gee, I wanted to be friends with that person, instead I like offended them, what is it in me that's, you know, miscalculated that? It's a lot harder to go into yourself and realize, oh, I did that because, you know, I felt unloved as a kid or something like that, and I need to rewrite that part of my program, you know.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder to change those programs that are within us. But that's kind of why we're here.
Well, you know, what works for me is to do both and also to go to the person and say, you know, I really, really, really screwed up. I'm really, really sorry. This is what I was thinking when I said that, and also explain that, you know, I've been going through this thing where I noticed that I've thought in the past that when I saw a picture when I was talking about something, or somebody else was talking about something and I saw a picture in my mind, I thought they saw exactly the same picture.
Yeah. Right.
And wrong.
Yeah.
Wrong. Not even
right.
Close, Peter. And I think it's just giving ourselves another chance to understand each other.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, that's what my husband and I always did. We went all the way through everything we were funny about. You know, I'd tell him and he'd go, okay, well, what else? Until I was empty. And he would do the same thing. And then really there is only I love you and I support you when you get to the bottom of that stack.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, it's being tenacious in relationship. It's going back there and saying, you know, I thought this was going to be the outcome when I said that. This was my desired outcome. I wanted to serve you. I wanted to be with you. I wanted to be close to you. I wanted to understand what was going on with you. And the other thing in relationship that I just think melts all judgment and everything is to just go, God, would you forgive me? Just
right.
To all of a sudden realize how it is for the other person. I remember this one time my husband and I were just having this big brouhaha over, it looked to me like nothing later, you know? And
right.
But I just, all of a sudden I put my hand on his heart, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like a little bird in my hand,
oh,
terrified.
That's touching, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought, he's that sensitive to me. He's that vulnerable to me. He's that open to me.
Right.
He's put his heart in my hand.
Oh.
And I, you know, I could just never go there again. I just made a new vow to be simple and sweet and pure and stay in the love.
Yeah, well, you know, if somebody gets real angry at you about something, it's usually because they're scared, don't you think?
Yeah.
But the anger is you've hit a soft spot there.
Well,
you know, a vulnerability.
Yeah, anger is a lot easier to feel than sadness.
Mm.
I really learned that when my husband passed away, that it was a lot easier for me to be angry and feel anger than it was to just feel how much grief I really felt.
Mm.
So, you know, we need to be watching ourselves, Peter. We need to wrap it up. I want to tell people to look at your website, check out your book, I Am the Open Door, one of the most beautiful books I've ever seen. Your website's one of the most beautiful websites I've ever seen.
PeterMountShasta.com.
Yeah, and Mount is
MT, Peter, MTSHASTA. And probably in a couple of, well, I'd say I'm hoping by Christmas my book will be out, Adventures of a Western Mystic. And the news of that will be on the website. It'll probably be published by Author House and maybe somebody else too. I don't know, but we'll see.
Okay. Thank you, Peter. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you, Iris. I've enjoyed talking with you, as always.
Me too, and I hope you'll come back soon. I feel like unlimited gifts can be given through us. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I hope your life is filled with all the miracles that you talk about on this program.
Thank you, Peter, and yours too, and everyone listening. And God bless you, and may all your dreams come true and be 1,000 times more wonderful than you ever dreamed possible.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep shining until then. Happy trails to you till we meet again. I love you. And this is my wish for you, that all your dreams come true and are 1,000 times more wonderful than you ever dreamed possible. Ah, men, ah, women, ah, children, and yeehaw!